Good morning, and welcome to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. This is your volunteer reader, Babs Felix, from the Sun Sound Studios of Arizona. Rick Hansen, PhD, is a psychologist and New York Times best-selling author. He's been invited to speak at NASA, Oxford, Stanford, Harvard, and meditation centers worldwide. His books are available in 28 languages and include Making Great Relationships, Hardwiring Happiness, Just One Thing, and Mother Nurture. His work has been featured on the BBC, CBS, NPR, and other major media. And now, Just One Thing. What's to like? The practice? See what's likable. Why? Liking feels good, plus it encourages us to approach and engage the world rather than withdraw from it. Why? Your brain continually tracks whether something is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. In essence, is it a carrot, a stick, or safely ignored? Naturally, we enjoy what's pleasant, dislike what's unpleasant, and wish what's neutral would get pleasant pronto. Natural opioids, pleasure molecules, are released when you see things that you like. On the other hand, disliking things can activate the neural networks of pain. Liking things feels good, so we approach them. Disliking things feels bad, so we avoid them. We are hardwired to like some things, like the sweetness of sugar, and dislike other things, like shivering from the cold. But most situations are in the middle and formed of many parts. Consequently, our response to them, liking or disliking, depends a lot on what we pay attention to and on our own perspective. Consider someone you know well, maybe your partner in life. Like each one of us, this person is a mosaic with many tiles. Even if you love this person, it's easy to get so used to his or her good qualities that you kind of tune them out. The same is true for other people, and for many everyday situations. For example, you might feel fine overall about your job or career, but have lost touch with lots of the concretely good things about it. I'm not talking about craving or clinging to what you like. You can thoroughly enjoy and like a pleasant experience while letting it flow through you without getting attached to it. Nor am I talking about rose-colored glasses. Sure, we need to see real problems and deal with them. But when we overlook things we could authentically like, we miss out on chances to feel good, step into life, and seize opportunities. Plus, flip it around. How do you feel when you are with someone who sees lots to like in you? When you find things to like in others, it's a beautiful gift to them. And in turn, it leads them to treat you better. How? Pick something simple, a meal, a room, a view out a window, and find something that you like about it. Perhaps it is a particular taste, or the curve of a favorite armchair, or the way that the light is playing on the leaves outside. For a few seconds or longer, stay with it and let the sense of enjoyment grow. Be mindful of the experience of liking something. Then shift your awareness to something you don't usually pay much attention to. Perhaps it's a spoon or a corner of the carpet or a stretch of sidewalk. Try to find one or more things to genuinely like about it. It's fine, in fact normal, if the liking is mild or subtle. Be mindful of the process of self-generating enjoyment. Notice how much power you actually have over whether you like something, and your power to find more and more things to like. With one or more people, look for things to like, to enjoy, respect, or appreciate. Of course, you're not waiving your rights or dropping your concerns just because you see something good in a person. You can do this when you're face to face or when you simply bring someone to mind. Try it with a person you're close to, with a friend, and with someone you don't know very well. For example, a server in a restaurant. For example, perhaps the person has a quirky sense of humor, or basic decency, or gentleness with children, or a plucky passion for doomed causes. Then, for a challenge, try this with someone who is troublesome for you, such as a meddling relative or a stressful person at work. Be mindful of the results with these various people. I bet it feels better to see what's likable about them, even the ones that you find irritating. And for the ones who are dear to you, you could find, as I have, that this practice brings freshness, gratitude, and renewed intimacy. Last and not least, how about recognizing what's likable about yourself? What do your friends and loved ones like about you? Can you see yourself in this way? How does it feel? You are listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. And here's another Just One Thing. Do people ever make you mad? The practice: cultivate goodwill. Why? As the most social and loving species on the planet, we have the wonderful ability and inclination to connect with others, be empathetic, cooperate, care, and love. On the other hand, we also have the capacity and inclination to be fearfully aggressive toward any individual or group we regard as them. In my book, Buddha's Brain, The Practical Neuroscience of Happiness, Love, and Wisdom, I develop this idea further, including how to stimulate and strengthen the neural circuits of self-control, empathy, and compassion. To tame the wolf of hate, it's important to get a handle on ill will. Irritated, resentful, and angry feelings and intentions toward others. While it may seem justified at the moment, ill will harms you probably more than it harms others. In another metaphor, having ill will toward others is like throwing hot coals with bare hands. Both people get burned. Avoiding ill will does not mean passivity, allowing yourself or others to be exploited, staying silent in the face of injustice, etc. There is plenty of room for speaking truth to power and effective action without succumbing to ill will. Think of Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and the Dalai Lama as examples. In fact, with a clear mind and a peaceful heart, your actions are likely to be more effective. Ill will creates negative, vicious cycles, but that means that goodwill can create positive cycles. Plus, goodwill cultivates wholesome qualities in you. How? Cultivate positive emotions. In general, really nourish and develop positive emotions, such as happiness, contentment, and peacefulness. For example, look for things to be happy about and take in the good whenever possible. Positive feelings calm the body, quiet the mind, create a buffer against stress, and foster supportive relationships, all of which reduce ill will. Practice non-contention. Don't argue unless you have to. Inside your own mind, try not to get swirled along by the mind streams of other people. Reflect on the neurological turbulence underlying their thoughts, the incredibly complicated, dynamic, and largely arbitrary churning of momentary neural assemblies into coherence and then chaos. Getting upset about somebody's thoughts is like getting upset about spray from a waterfall. Try to decouple your thoughts from the other person's. Tell yourself, she's over there and I'm over here. Her mind is separate from my mind. Be careful about attributing intentions. Be cautious about attributing intentions to other people. Prefrontal theory of mind networks attribute intentions routinely, but they are often wrong. Most of the time, you are just a bit player in other people's dramas. They are not targeting you particularly. Bring compassion to yourself. As soon as you feel mistreated, bring compassion to yourself. This is urgent care for the heart. Try putting your hand on your cheek or heart to stimulate the embodied experience of receiving compassion. Meet mistreatment with loving kindness. Traditionally, loving kindness is considered the direct antidote to ill will. So resolve to meet mistreatment with loving kindness, no matter what. A famous sutra in Buddhism sets a high standard. Even if bandits were to sever you savagely limb by limb with a two-handled saw, you should train thus. Our minds will remain unaffected, and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare with a mind of loving kindness without inner hate. Personally, I'm not there yet, but if it's possible to stay loving while being horribly mistreated, and from some of the accounts of people in awful circumstances, it clearly is, then we should be able to rise up in lesser situations, like getting cut off in traffic or being put down yet again by a teenager. Communicate. To the extent that it's useful, speak your truth and stick up for yourself with skillfulness and assertiveness. Your ill will is telling you something. The art is to understand its message. Perhaps that another person is not a true friend, or that you need to be clearer about your boundaries without being swept away by anger. Put things in perspective. Put whatever happened in perspective. The effects of most events fade with time. They're also part of a larger whole, the great majority of which is usually fine. Practice generosity. Use things that aggravate you as a way to practice generosity. Consider letting people have what they took, their victory, their bit of money or time, their one-upping. Be generous with forbearance and patience. Cultivate positive qualities. Cultivate positive qualities like kindness, compassion, empathy, and calm. Nourish your own goodwill. You are listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. Does it feel safe with other people? The practice: relax needless fear around others. Why? We all know this fear. You step into a meeting with people you know, and still there could be a watchfulness, a restraint, a certain carefulness in how you speak that comes more from subtle anxiety than any reasonable prudence. Perhaps someone disagrees with you in this meeting, and you feel uneasy, off balance, unprotected. Maybe later you worry about what others thought about how you responded to the disagreement. Was I too irritated and pushy? Do they think I'm defensive? What should I do next time? When you get home, let's say your teenage son is quiet and prickly as usual. You want to tell him that the chilly distance between you feels awful and you want to open your heart to him. But it feels awkward. You're afraid of making things worse. And when you spoke from the heart while growing up, it did not go well. And the fears reaching back into your childhood shadow and strengthen your fears today. So you say nothing again. I have had to deal with this myself. And these are just the milder social anxieties. Consider stronger ones, such as common fears about others getting angry, public speaking, being vulnerable, talking with authority figures, what others might think about your body, or being around people who aren't like you. Sometimes these fears are justified. People in your life might actually want to pressure, dismiss, mistreat, hurt, or exploit you. If you belong to a group of people that have been systematically discriminated against, harassed, assaulted, or even worse, it's perfectly understandable to be wary of this happening to you, perhaps again and again. On a larger scale, Think about the recurring theme throughout human history of authoritarian leaders revving up grievances against them in order to increase their own power and wealth. It's prudent to be alarmed about this when it's happening, especially when there is still time to stop it. Safety is arguably the most fundamental need of any animal, including us, and it's vital to be clear-eyed about threats and strong and skillful in dealing with them. Nothing in what follows is meant to minimize this. All this said, it is also true that very often our fears around other people are really not justified. Much of the time, they couldn't care less about what we did. We are usually just a bit player in their own personal drama anyway. Or, if they do care, it's a passing feeling. Even if the other person does react, most likely you could handle it fine. Further, if there truly is something to deal with, a conflict, issue, broken agreement, betrayal, it is possible to be clear-eyed, strong, straightforward, confident, and secure without being anxious about it. Anxiety is something added to our response to situations. Sometimes it's helpful, but usually it clouds thinking, adds needless suffering, and fuels conflict with others. So, there are two kinds of mistakes we can make: having too little or too much anxiety around others. We should do our best to avoid making either kind. But which mistake is more common? It's the second one. Needless anxiety stirred into the sauce of life, making it bitter. You have been listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. And we have a little bit of time left, so we're going to go to some questions and answers from Ask Dr. Rick. Dear Dr. Rick, as soon as I notice a good thing, I automatically have anxiety about not being able to hold on to it long enough. Help. Answer. Try this. When engaging a basic sensual pleasure like eating a strawberry or enjoying a warm shower or bath, give yourself over to savoring the pleasure without anxiety. It's natural for your mind to wander slightly, but you needn't be anxious about this. You're still encoding the experience in implicit memory. Also try focusing on breathing and giving yourself over to it. And then use the learning from these experiences to apply to receiving other positive experiences. Dear Dr. Rick, do you have any suggestions for my fear that the closer I get to happiness, the more I feel deeply afraid that something bad will happen? Answer. You raise a real and common concern that if we feel good, putting it simply, then bad things will happen. Perhaps we will lower our guard, or others will punish us, or we'll be disloyal to others who suffer. I've thought a lot about this issue with these reflections. We can still be aware of threats, even while feeling good. In fact, taking in good feelings makes us better at dealing with threats. Most people really want us to feel good and support us in feeling good. And usually, we can gradually disengage from those who do not. You can become increasingly aware of the underlying psychological patterns that associate fear with feeling good. Maybe those patterns made sense when you were young, but not today. With practice, you can be mindful of these reactivated psychological material and use the methods that I've covered extensively, including the HEAL process, to soothe, ease, contextualize, and eventually replace those feelings. Spending time with people who celebrate your aliveness, passion, and joy without shaming it is very good to do. It seems like your brain is associated one thing with another, such as the love of your child, associated with fear for their well-being. For that, I'd suggest developing mindfulness of the fear and then opening to the felt knowing that she is okay, then returning to love for her. Intuitively, my hunch is that you have a huge heart. The link step in the HEAL process, repeatedly taking in antidote experiences for the unresolved pain or traumatic residues, could be helpful here. You've been listening to Ask Dr. Rick, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, thanking you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.